Hey, welcome to the Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. My name is Sean Fouché, and this is episode 204 for December 1st. It is December, folks. Christmas is right on the way. December 1st of 2023, and on tonight's podcast, we got TCU Hall of Famer Shannon Brazil. How you doing, Shannon?
Well, you mentioned Christmas. You mentioned December. I'm doing good to be on this Zoom or this call with you all. But Santa ain't giving us no bowl. We ain't getting no presents this month. There's no bowl game. There's nothing to be thankful for if we're freaking the Horn Frog, fan, alumni, whatever the case may be. We're going to be at home watching all the other bowls, which is not too stressful.
It's not a bad consolation prize after you get a big old lump of coal in your stocking.
Exactly.
Also on tonight's podcast, we've got TCU forward player Nathan Hernandez. How you doing, Nathan?
Survived the season, and the sun still shines, metaphorically, because it's raining in nighttime. But we're still here, still alive. We get to look forward to next season. Get to look forward to the Cowboys, maybe. But we'll see. But doing good.
Yeah, we are recording this on Thursday night. The Cowboys haven't yet kicked off against the Seahawks, so that'll be an interesting game. Well, we're going to kick off this podcast with Barry Lewis and a Fan Nation update. Barry, how are you doing tonight, and what new information do you have for us this evening?
I am doing well. I'm a week out from being on a beach in Maui, so life is good.
Oh.
Wow.
Just rub it in, man.
Nathan brought up the weather, so I had to throw that in there. So Fan Nation, we are having a great month. I just wanted to share some numbers real quick. Our October was not a great October, and kind of went along with the play that we were seeing on the football field, and it was kind of reminiscent of what we were seeing on our website. But November is a different story. November is going to finish as our top 4 month in our 2 years of doing the Fan Nation site. Our wow. Traffic on Fan Nation has already surpassed what we did in all of 2022. So we're with all of December still to go. So we're pretty happy with that. And a large part of that is this fall, our excellent team of writers and producers and everybody that's putting that content out there, we are averaging 43 pieces of content every week. That's 6 a day.
Wow.
Last fall, during a historical run to the national championship in football, we averaged 35. So we're just putting that much more out there, which is getting us that many more viewers coming to the site. So we're really happy with that.
Well, and just to clarify, these aren't all about football.
It's not all about football. That is correct. That's covering all of TCU sports. We were this fall, we had soccer, we had volleyball, we had equestrian, we had rifle. All of those we had coverage about. We are working on our basketball plan now that we're just a couple weeks away, really, from conference season beginning for both men's and women's. And we have a really extensive basketball plan that we're going to be excited to share with everybody. We're going to have probably 20 to 25 basketball articles or videos every week. And part of that is our new basketball podcast that has been out for a month now, 4 episodes, with Davis and Nick doing those, and they're looking forward to bringing those out every week, our Frog Fever basketball podcast. And speaking of podcast, in February, we will launch a weekly baseball podcast with a couple of our team members doing that. So we'll have weekly football, basketball, and baseball there in February and March podcasts coming out. So that should be exciting to do. But I wanted to spend just a minute talking about football. And for us on the Fan Nation side, even though TCU season is done, we are not done with what we're doing for football. We've got championship weekend covered with all sorts of angles and articles out there already. If you've not seen it, we put a new article out today that Tori wrote. Tori has been on with you all a few times this season. And basically, she's saying why everybody needs to jump on the OSU bandwagon.
She'd say that.
Well, exactly. And in doing so, she's given us a lot of information about maybe some of the players from OSU that you may or may not be so familiar with if you haven't been paying attention to them, especially since TCU didn't play the Cowboys this year. So there's a great article out there on that. We've got a great plan for bowl season as we move into that. We've got several articles that we've already put out there doing some predictions of who would make it into the bowls. We've got a placeholder out there right now that we will get updated as soon as the bowls are updated on Sunday, telling you who's in and who's in at each particular bowl. There are 41 bowl games that we'll be keeping track of. We'll be doing a whole bowl prediction through each bowl game. We'll be able to predict the games. We'll do recaps of those games. We're also going to be doing, as we did last year, a confidence bowl pool, and we'll be tracking that throughout the season with our writers as to who's doing well and who's not doing so well with their confidence votes. If you all want to participate in that, you all are welcome. Just let me know that. And we just published, just this afternoon, our final power rankings article for the season. And just to recap on this, we have 44 people from across the country that participate in our power ranking voting each week. There's 13 of us on our staff with Killer Frogs, but then there's also one or two people from every other Big 12 school, including the four new ones that will be coming in next July. So all of those people have been participating every week, ranking their teams, ranking the 14 teams in the Big 12 with the power rankings. And so today's article that we just published is a little bit different than what we've been doing. And it kind of just goes through the journey of each team from where they were with our power rankings at the beginning of the year to where they were at the end of the football season. And I've got a couple of trivia questions for you all to jump in here on. So,
all right.
Let's see. So, interestingly, the average swing of each of the teams in the Big 12 was 6.5 spots. And what that means is from the highest ranking they had in the 14 weeks to the lowest ranking that they had in the 14 weeks was a 6.5-point slide, which is just pretty incredible and just tells you pretty much what we all lived through with the whole Big 12, that every week it was who really is the good team this week, other than, you know, the couple teams that stayed at the top the whole time. So, you know, Baylor had an 8-point swing. TCU had a 6-point swing. Houston had a 5-point. BYU and Cincinnati went 7 points. But here's the question. I'll give you the easy one first. Which team had the lowest slide, meaning the lowest differential between their highest ranking and their lowest ranking?
Ooh, that's a good question.
K-State.
You know, the obvious – sorry, what was that, Nathan?
I said K-State.
Oh, K-State. Yeah, that's a good one, although they did kind of stumble here and there.
K-State was right in the middle. They had a 5-point swing. They started the season at number two. Week number two, they jumped up to number one, and week seven they fell as low as number six.
I'm going to go the opposite way. I'm going to say Baylor.
This is which sport?
This is for football, and this is our football power rankings based on which team had the biggest slide from high to low over the 14 weeks. Baylor was Baylor was 8 spots, which is right in the middle. They started at number 6. They quickly went to the bottom. They were at number 14 by week 3, and they finished at number 13.
Yeah, my second guess would have been West Virginia.
Virginia.
What are you saying, Nathan? What did you say, Nathan?
TCU.
TCU went 6 spots. Hold the West Virginia thought. We'll get to that in the next question. Yeah. The team that didn't slide the most or didn't move the most was Texas. Texas started at number one. I believe they played Rice that first week in week one, and they kind of struggled against Rice in the first half, and then they finally got past them in the second half. But because of that, they dropped from 1 to 3 on week 2. They were back to number 1 on week 3 until they lost to Oklahoma. Then they dropped to number 2. And on week 10, they moved back to number 1 and didn't stop. So they only slid two spots from high to low. What team What team slid the most?
See, that's what I thought we were answering. Sorry, I was going to say Texas, but didn't slide the most. For the most?
And then I'll give you the number. They slid 11 spots. Or there was 11 spot variance. So,
yeah.
Kansas?
Yeah.
What'd you say, Shannon?
I would say either Kansas or West Virginia.
West Virginia came close. West Virginia was 10 spots. They started the season at number 14. Week 6 and 7, they made it as high as number 4, and they ended at number 7.
Okay.
Who's the other team?
Who was it?
Who's the other team playing in the championship?
Oh, really? OSU.
Oh, okay. OSU.
Oh yeah,
because
they lost to South Alabama.
Yeah,
that's right.
OSU started out number 7. They got as high as number 5. They lost to South Alabama and dropped to 11. Then they kept dropping and dropped as low as number 13, only to end the season at number 2.
That's a crazy swing, man. That's so crazy. And you know, it's interesting. It kind of underscores, we were talking about the Sarigan ratings on the forum over this last week, and I think the power rankings showed that from a strength of schedule standpoint, the Big 12 was actually ranked higher than any of the other conferences as far as strength of schedule this semester or this season. So just really kind of shows just how crazy this particular conference has been. And that's insane for that kind of a swing.
So all of those numbers are out in our new power rankings article that just went out tonight. So take a look at it.
We will. Well, thank you, Barry. We really appreciate it.
That's all I have. So,
all right. Well, y'all, it is the end of the season because unfortunately, TCU did drop their final game in Norman, 69-45, the day after Thanksgiving. And as Shannon kind of alluded to at the top of the podcast, gave every single TCU fan a nice big old lump of coal for their Christmas break. And unfortunately, we're going to be missing a bowl game. And we are not the first team, obviously, to go from the national championship to having a losing season the following year. I think the last Big 12 team to do that was actually Texas. So there's something to hang your hat on. But problem is that now we're staring down the barrel of the offseason, watching bowl games from home, missing out on those extra practices that we talked about that were so important last week. And now we've got to kind of look to see what needs to happen to right this ship. How do you go to the top of the mountain, to the bottom in a matter of one season, pretty much eliminating all the goodwill and progress your program has made in one year? So, Shannon, let's go ahead and start with you. I know you're not shy about defensive issues, and we can certainly get into that a little bit later on, but let's start at the top. Let's start with coaching. Do you want to see any changes with this coaching staff in the offseason?
Well, I'll tell you, there's been some, you know, I talked to a few alumni, just not even about this, it just happens to come up, and people were hearing and wanting to some change within the first 48 hours after that game was over. I mean, they, you know, and it was starting with the defense, and people are disappointed that they haven't heard anything or any changes being made, at least at the DC position. I've even heard people wanting the OC gone, but I think that's personal because of Barrow's name. I'm about the team first before I'm about off the field stuff and all the hearsay she say, but let's keep in mind, guys, if we had half the defense we had last year, we're going to a bowl game and we're competing in a big bowl because offense put up points, okay? Even in the Oklahoma loss, we put up points. Offense is not the issue, has not been the issue, even with a backup quarterback. It's the defense, guys. We put up, we left 69 points, whatever it was, our last game. Even there, I don't care. People are putting up way too much points, and now we have fallen into the Big 12. They don't play defense. They don't, but for the most part, for over the years, defense have always kept it true to defense. We gave up the least amount of points. We played defense. We won because of defense. And now we can't seem to get it together because of defense. So the first thing I would be looking for is a change, be it at the coach's, the DC's position, or the defensive change. One of the two's got to happen. guys, if we come into this next season with a 3-3-5 defense, guys, I'm willing to bet a good cigar that if we will lose recruits over the 3-3-5 defense. It has shown you no positivity. It has shown you no upside for the most part in glimpses, but it has shown you nothing as a player that's on the defensive side to hold their hat about, besides a secondary who will get tested. Now, if you're that guy who feel like I can shut these guys down, I can play in this, okay, that's one thing. But the proof is in the pudding. There's nothing exciting all year long about this defense that would make some top recruits come here. And then to your point, Sean, we don't get us scouts. They've only seen the bad taste in their mouth for the most part this year. And if you're on the fence, you don't get a chance to see a bowl game. So now you've got to hold your hat on what you've seen from the Frogs. But here's the negative side. Those recruits now get to watch every weekend with the nation different bowl games, different schools they have on the list too. They could see that. And so I'm telling you, that's going to leave the last impression in their mind. So for us, we end the season on a bad note, but we're starting the season on a bad note because recruits matter. And I hope and pray that we have some good guys there who can recruit, because we lost some good recruiters. I hope we have some guys who can really get in and convince some of these kids that TCU's a spot for them, which I believe it is for the right kid. But we've got some work to do. We're behind the eight ball now. You go from not making a bowl game, now you're behind the eight ball. Because you don't get those guys looking at you. The TV shut out for us. It's over. You got to Google us now.
Well, it's a good point. And Nathan, let me bring you in on this, because Shannon talked about Briles on the offensive side. And yeah, there was a lot of people, and I'll admit I am one of them. I was hoping within 48 hours we would hear some sort of a change, but definitely on the defensive side of the ball. I think offensively, Frogs kind of end the season around 13 or 14 in the nation on offense. And given the fact of where this team is, Nathan, I'm kind of inclined to agree here with Shannon. We have a halfway decent defense. Not only are we going bowling, but we're probably knocking at the door of a Big 12 championship game again. So how do you feel about change either on the offense or defensive side of the coaching staff?
I definitely think that defense needs to get addressed first. You know, you go back to even last year, Michigan, Georgia gave up 45 points to Michigan, 65 points to Georgia, and then you come in first game of the season, give up 45 again to Colorado.
Yeah.
Defense gets one stop, which and I'll give them a credit of, you know, we threw two picks, but defense gets, you know, one of those stops, or we make a field goal, the game's tied going to overtime. But and so I think we also have a special teams issue, but like I said, you know, look at how many games we lost by less than a one-score possession. You know, Texas could have beat them. We didn't offense couldn't get something going at the right time, but that's not necessarily an entirely offensive issue for our team. That's just going to happen throughout the season. You're going to have times your offense isn't doing great, defense has to step it up. You're going to have times when the defense isn't doing great, offense has to step it up. And that's, I think, one of our biggest things this year is we just didn't have complementary football. We didn't have everybody playing on the same level outside of a couple games. But I think defense needs to get addressed more than anything, because if you get a few of those stops, like Shannon said, we're in a bowl game. You know, we have at least 3-4 extra wins to go on top of it. You beat the team that's playing in the Big 12 championship. They're probably not going to the Big 12 championship because Oklahoma beat them. And so, and that is what it is, but Oklahoma game was what it was. Again, you put up 40 points. Not the issue offensively. Yeah, people are getting upset because, you know, all of his past stuff, all the stuff that happened at Baylor, but that's personal. You know, it is what it is. I'm not saying it was right or wrong what he did. I'm not speaking for him on that aspect. But if you look at it from just the offensive standpoint, yeah, there were a couple games. K-State, we only scored 3 points. I'm trying to get them. Like some of the games we sputtered. We didn't have a lot of offense, but that's just
Iowa State.
Yeah, but again, you know, you get an offensive coordinator in his first year. You know, it's not going to be sunshine and roses. There's going to be growing pains with that. You're going to have a couple weeks where it's up and down. And they, like Coach Dyke spoke on at the last press conferences, you know, they started to get their rhythm in the last quarter of the season, which is what we wanted. I don't think offense is the issue. Defense needs to be.
Well,
I'm set. Big.
We're going straight to the 125, baby. You can book that.
Hey, someone said bring in Sam Carter.
Oh, yeah, that would be nice. That would be good. Barry, Nathan mentioned that post-game conference for Sonny Dykes, and you had shared some things that were spoken during that press conference. But one of the things I think you mentioned in that text thread that was kind of going on right after the game was that the players sounded optimistic, I guess, as far as the direction that the program was going, or at least that they felt that the program could be going in. Do you feel that the players that certain players are frustrated with certain coaches, or do you feel that overall this locker room is okay with the current coaching staff?
So let me give you the caveat that post game of the Oklahoma game, we did talk to three players. They all were offensive players. We didn't get a defensive guy in there. So what's their attitude? I don't know. We hadn't seen one in a couple weeks on that. So in a press conference, but post game, we met with Josh Hoover, JoJo Earl, and Imani Bailey. And all three of them were, they were frustrated with the game. They were frustrated they didn't get the win, but they all thought that they had some good things to build upon in that Oklahoma game. And all three of them said they were ready for spring practice to begin so they could start righting the ship and, correcting what they know needed to be corrected. I saw a lot of optimism from those three. I saw from just the brief conversation we had with Josh Hoover, some incredible, what I thought of as leadership and motivational skills that he was trying to present. He was asked a question about JoJo Earl, and he immediately was, he was like, I know JoJo had a good day. Can somebody just give me his stats? Cause I haven't had a chance to look at it. I need to know what they were. And he was, he really concerned. Yes, I know he had a good day, but how good was it? So it was just kind of things like that were encouraging to see. I think my biggest takeaway from those post-game press conferences were the two questions that Sonny Dykes was asked. Very first question was asked about what changes he was going to make specifically with the defense. And his answer was, everything is under review, from the pregame meal to who's making the calls. And then a few questions later, he was asked about specifically about Kendall Briles. And he said, started out the season weak, got strong as the season went on. So I think if you run those two answers together in one answer, you see what his thought process is. Briles is staying.
That's encouraging to hear him say that.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
I said it was encouraging to hear him say that about the, I'm focusing more on the defensive side than the offensive side, because I think I'm agreeing both with Nathan and Shannon here. Defense has got to be job number one outside of recruiting, obviously, and the things that you got to do well in the offseason or keep the program going. But defense seems to be the number one issue right now. I think we finished somewhere in the high 80s to low 90s nationwide in defense. That can't happen at TCU, right? Absolutely can't happen at TCU. And for that to happen as many times as it has in the last 4 years is ridiculous. And so this is definitely something that has to be addressed. And so it's good to hear that Coach Dykes is making that a priority. But to Shannon's point, I think a lot of people were hoping within 48 hours we'd hear something. And at this point, Barry,
it's been a week.
I haven't heard anything yet. Yeah, it's been a week. We don't even know what's going on.
Shannon, I got a question.
Yeah.
You say you want to go back to the 425, right?
Talk to me.
So what was the problem before Coach P left? Defensively, because they still weren't playing great, and we were in 4-5.
We've always had that's always been the issue. Think about it. When we got hurt on certain positions in 4-5, we couldn't make up in those positions. When we hurt in secondary, when they were either being linebacker, being whatever. So for me, it was depth. And then I would say getting out coached, getting out schemed. But at the end of the day, if you looked at it, I don't have the stats in front of me, the margins of it, just the percentages of just the 3-2-5 and the 4-2-5 just from a yardage per game, I guarantee you it's nowhere close. Because you have, I mean, it's the rule of thumb. You have four people up front versus five. When you blitz a linebacker or two, now you have six on five because the quarterback does not count. So now what you have to pick up, like, it's just, it's the numbers game. So we don't even have that to play with right now. Even when we blitz, we're blitzing five on five for the most part. And if they have a tight end in there, we're still outmatched. It's just, you just look at it for what it is. Okay. And everybody saw it. I said it from the first of the year. Even the worst quarterback in the league, which all, you know, for the most part, everybody's pretty solid. If you give them time, they will pick us apart and find the holes. When you have time, you're going to get destroyed. I mean, 1,000, 2,000, we got to be there. It was like, it was 5-6 seconds a lot of times before we even got to the quarterback. There was times where I was looking to where you had three linemen pent, and he had a halo around him. He just sitting back, patting the ball, waiting for people to get open. That can't happen. So even if all things being equal, I'm taking the numbers game, and I got to roll with the 4-2-5 or 4-4 stack, something different, something different.
Yeah, I think the 4-2-5 is just easy to confuse people. 3-3-5, unless you're bringing like certain packages, like you're pretty much playing it simple. Hey, we got three D linemen, three linebackers.
And most of the time, yeah, they're covering. The linebackers, if they're blitzing, they're covering. If everybody goes out, the linebackers are in space. Now, I'll take my chances all day long with a running back on a linebacker. I'll take them all day long. You know what I mean? And even we have some decent linebackers, and I'm pretty cool with the linebacker play for the most part. And we had some injuries there, but I'm not even, you know, for the most part, we had some great play there. But, you know, it's just what it is, man. And so at the end of the day, you have to address that. And Barry, you said about Coach Sonny Dykes there. And for me, you know, just being not a fan, being an analyst, I would say, I'm waiting. If you told me it's going to be some changes or you're going to evaluate, and I'm trusting that you said you're going to evaluate from the pregame, breakfast, lunch, dinner, whatever, all the way to the back end, well, you're going to see what we saw. You're going to see that there needs to be some changes. So, and you know already, so what's going to take you this long to make a decision? My thing is, you know, if you say this now or then, how long are you going to let this slide before people start saying, hey, man, we ain't see no changes, and you said what you said, so we got to trust in what you said. You lead the ship. Your word means something. So if there's no changes and you evaluated it like you said you're going to evaluate it, brother, there needs to be some changes. And I would say sooner than later.
I think it's because there are still teams playing games this weekend when obviously you'll see a lot of coaching changes in the like bowl games coming up. But I think some of the people they might be talking to might still be in that game mode or preparation mode. And so I think that's why we haven't said anything. You don't want to, and as much as it happens, I don't think that Coach Dykes wants to mess with people like that, but I think that might be why there's some delay on that one. They don't have their backup like signed yet. So it's,
well, it's a bit of a strategic.
Nathan, I would agree with you, but I will say this, as we had a little bit of conversation before this podcast, I will let you know, players are getting ready for bowl games and championship games and being called every single day. If players are being called every single day to transfer or enter the portal, you best rest assured coaches are too. It's just part of it now. Things are different. And I'm not saying Dykes is that way, and you have a great point, because there is some respect in the game people do have for other people. But when you got to win and your check is on the line, you got to move now, because those other – the people without the respect or however you want to put it, they making the phone call. They making the text message. They said, hey, brother, we need you over here. So it's one of those situations where, man, we got to move now versus later. We're going to get left behind because these people, the good ones, are being contacted.
Oh, it's happening. When did Garrett Riley announce he was leaving?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a very good point. You know, and it goes to, again, how much this game has changed, right? If the head coach can't change with the game, you end up with another Gary Patterson situation, right? As much as I love Coach Patterson, as much as he is an amazing football coach, both on X and O's and just what he's able to do with a team, the fact is that the game changed and he wasn't willing to change with it. And it caught up with him. Took a couple years, but it caught up to him. Same thing's going to happen to Dykes. Now, Dykes came in and he already had a reputation of being the guy who could hit the transfer portal. Back when the transfer portal first got started under those old rules, now you've got this kind of instant eligibility, and it's a free-for-all. It's a free agency for the most part in college football. And I think you're right, Shannon. I mean, coaches are going to end up doing the exact same thing, right? It's no longer about loyalty to a specific school or loyalty to a specific coaching staff or a specific coaching tree or any of the stuff that we've seen in the past that was the heart and blood of college football. Now you've got to change with the times. And if you're going to want to get somebody, you're going to have to go out and get somebody ASAP. Not only that, you also have to figure out into the fact that you've got donors donating to your NIL pool, which again, leads to what sort of players you can get in that transfer portal or out of high school as recruits. And so now donors are waiting to see what you're doing. And if you're not making any changes, they're holding on to their pocketbooks. NIL money's not coming in. Transfers aren't getting paid. Recruits aren't getting paid. Things aren't happening. And the next thing you know, you're all sitting around waiting for something to happen that's going to pass you by. And that's a huge, huge problem. So I'm hoping Nathan's right. I'm hoping this is just a thing where they're talking to people, the ink hasn't dried on the contract yet, they're waiting to make a decision, and that's just going to be the case. Because as of right now, I know for the last couple of days, it's getting really antsy in Frogdom because they are wanting to change at the DC level, and they're not seeing anything happen. And Shannon, going back, you and Nathan were talking about the 335, and I wanted to ask you this question because somebody brought this up. This was a really good point about a week or so ago. And the 335 is not some brand new concept. 335 has been around for a while, and it can be run very successfully, both at the college and the pro level. And the 335 is really all about masking what you're doing on the defense, right? You never know which linebackers are going to be blitzing, which linebacker is going to run up and become a fourth man or then come back into coverage, and then the fifth guy is going to come. You never know what's going to happen, right? It's all about chess moves. And that's great, except for the fact that it seems that Gillespie doesn't have a good grasp on how to do that at this level. What I mean by at this level, I'm talking about the Big 12. Do you think that that seems to be the case with this 335, or do you think it's just it's depth, it's personnel, it's coaching, it's all of it? Let's just trash it and get right back to business with the 425.
Listen, I agree with you. People have got to understand, you know, the 335 and its weaknesses. Now, I've went over those weaknesses all year long because it's based off personnel. Okay, if you have, you know, the Aaron Donalds and the certain people in the next level that requires, and if you guys can think of any, you know, like our freshman, or well, he's not a freshman anymore, our guy, the big strong guy in the middle, I can't think his name, number 95, our big, you know, you need like three or four of him, because what happens is if you can push the pocket and get away with the loops, I didn't see very many loops, you know, loops, meaning the nose tackle is looping with the tackle, and we're trying to, you know, confuse them. You have to play mind games with them. But you have to have shutdown corners. You have to have linebackers who can cover. Like, I'm talking about, you know, and again, 4-5, 4-4, like, you need some speedy linebackers to cover, because at the end of the day, it's designed to shut down the back end, guys. Think about that. Think about the points we gave up. You got 8-9 people in the back, like, at all times. How are people running scot-free down the middle and when you have 3-5 people back there? It's you have a corner where you got help over the top. I don't understand when I saw those things happen. Either that's just a mental breakdown by safety, or the coaches just simply didn't put them in the right position. I mean, that cannot happen in a 3-3-5. You know what I'm saying? So for me, it was depth. It was simply depth. And then how he played them. Did he really study the opponent to understand what type of 3-3-5 we're going to have to do? Where we're going to have to play a little stronger versus weak? The matchup game. And it seems to me, when you see the points that are being put up, guys, it's none of that. So, I mean, so it's got to be something. It's either the talent, which I don't believe it's all the way the talent. I just don't believe that. I believe we got some good talent there. I believe we got guys who can play elsewhere and start. And I do believe we have some young guys as well, which is we got to understand we lost a lot of guys to the NFL. We have to understand it. I get it. Mm-hmm. But that will also let you know it's the personnel. We had personnel. We had depth. We don't have that now. So it's a combination of all that, if you ask me. It's a combination of coaching, knowing your talent, knowing what you have week in, week out, knowing how beat up you are. And we saw that time, Sean, he brought up four linebackers when he was blitzing. And I guarantee you on those plays, the quarterback had less time. We saw nothing but positivity. And we saw the ball come out right now. Whether they called it or not, that's the name of the game. You cannot put your corners on an island like that and they don't have that type of experience when they're going against some top-notch receivers. It's just right. And if you do, you have to have people over the top. You have to. And how many times did we see deep bombs on us? I mean, let's be real about it. We saw it every game. That cannot happen in a 3-3-5. I just need people to vision that. You have three receivers going deep, maybe four, and you have four, five people in the secondary, and include linebackers, and they're getting open. Think about it.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Nathan. You know, let's dive into this just a little bit further here. Personnel issues. We were told all preseason we got depth, right? We did lose players to the NFL, the vast majority of which were offensive players. And here we are now at the end of the season with a top 15 offense and a bottom 100 defense. Do you think it's depth? Do you think it's preparedness? Do you think it's just the coaching or the style of defense we're playing?
I will say that we lost an award-winning cornerback.
Yeah.
Corner. The NFL. So that's going to – like, you're going to have some regression with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did lose mostly offensive guys. We lost D at linebacker. You know, that's someone who had a lot of experience. You have to – and it comes down to replacing experience. Not necessarily replacing the player. Because that's with some of these players that we lost, that's not going to happen. Those were one of a kind players.
Yeah.
You have to replace experience, and we didn't have the ability to do that. And I'm not going to, name names. I'm not going to throw any of our players under the bus or anything like that. But we just had some younger guys that just didn't perform to the level that their predecessor did. And keep in mind, a predecessor had several years and, went through one of these years. The year before, we didn't make a bowl game. Year before that, we didn't do well. So they went through their growing pains as well. But to compete, got to play well. We just didn't have a lot of guys do that in the secondary. And I'll say that more than anything. I think in our secondary, just got torched way too much. It is what it is. I don't know. Because I'm not in the meetings. I can't see what they're preparing, how they're preparing them. I would hope that they're preparing them well enough. We're putting them in the position and putting the right player in certain positions. But I think our secondary was the biggest issue this year. Because like Shan said, you got five defenders in the backfield, five DBs. You got to do something with that. Like, the amount of guys that were just wide open somehow down the field. Like, we've always at TCU, I don't know why, we've always had an issue with running backs out the backfield. So that is what it is. Down the field, how many bombs OU threw down the field and Colorado? Ridiculous. Like, that can't happen. Like, you can't expect to go into a game and just be like, all right, you know what? If we give up an 80-yard pass, we'll be fine. That's not your game plan. You don't want to be in those type of shootouts. You obviously want to be the one doing that on offense, and we weren't doing that necessarily. And so you can't do the same in return. So I think that this is a lot of this is on our secondary. We had some injuries at linebacker that we had to deal with kind of throughout the season. Some of those things are not unavoidable. They're going to happen. You're going to have injuries throughout the year. That's why, we play the games. That's why it's a long season. It's, it is what it is. I think our D line needs to get a little bigger. I think we need a little bit more size, just to be able to push alignment around, and to free up, because, if you have a dominant defensive lineman, and he takes two linemen, you know, you're freeing up a linebacker. You're freeing somebody up to make a play. Now, that kind of goes also into scheming, and that goes into Shannon's point. You got to scheme that. You know, I think what we had a lot of games where we had to make a lot of halftime adjustments. Colorado, I'll give them that pass because we didn't know what was going to happen in that game. But a lot of these teams, we've played them every year for however many years, you know. You got to know what's coming. Yeah, especially at least later 11. At least 11. You got to go, especially later in the season. Like, these guys have played 10 games. They're going to give you stuff to watch. I don't know why we were having to make so many halftime adjustments. It's like that we just – kind of just we're like, whatever, we'll just go out there, line up, run this. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. Okay, now we know what they're doing. You should have known what they were doing ahead of time. So I think there is a lot of scheming, but I think there is a lot of effort on the defensive in the secondary that needed to be a little bit better.
Well, sorry,
Barry, very long-winded.
No, it was a good point. And we had talked several times on several different points in the press box, just how it just kept looking like this defense needed a quarter and a half to get going. And unfortunately, by the time quarter and a half happened in Oklahoma, they're already up 40, 40 to 17 or whatever it was at that point. You can't put your offense behind that many points before halftime.
I said that going into the Texas game to somebody. I was like, if we go down more than 14 points against Texas, we're not coming back. And we didn't.
Yep. No, we didn't. Almost did, but gave up another long pass there at the end. Granted, it was a fantastic adjustment by the receiver to make that catch on that third and long, but still, long pass, you get beat on third and long when you could have shut it down and give Hoover a chance to at least win the game. That was a bit deflating. Well, Barry, at this point, it doesn't look, at least as of right now, you got other teams around the nation that are making coaching changes. They're already hitting the coaching carousel. There are several that are going into a bowl game that are making changes or making headlines that they will be making changes following their bowl game. At this point, if TCU doesn't make a change and they stay with Gillespie, what do you think they need to do to right this ship moving forward on the defensive side of the ball?
With Gillespie still there. I don't know that I have an answer to that. Based on what we've been saying is that, we all expected this days ago and now it's still going on. So reality is that's probably true.
I'll say this, Barry. Let me help you out with this. If Gillespie's still there, this is what's got to happen. He's got to blitz more. He's got to play more. You shouldn't have your linebackers covered. We've got to have at least another linebacker. We've got a better scheme. He's going to have to scheme it better. That's just got to happen. Secondly, he's got to get the athletes in that he envisions that can run that defense, because that's a vision thing. And you can have a vision all day long, but if you don't have the people to carry out your vision, it's just a wasted vision. It's all for naught. So he has to have the players to make that thing come to fruition. And they're going to have to be stronger up front, bigger up front, faster up front. And we cannot, even in the 35, you cannot give the quarterback all day. Just because you run the rule of thumb, you got to have the quarterback, the ball's got to be going in 3 seconds. Even they tell the quarterbacks that, hey, the ball's got to be out. Offensive guys said, you can't hold, ball's got to be gone. Whether you have, from a defensive standpoint, whether you have four guys up front, five guys up front, three guys up front, that never changes. The ball has to be gone in 3 seconds. Therefore, one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three, one thing. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, three Mississippi, four Mississippi, five, a whole nother. You see what I'm saying? That's a whole nother deal. That's two plays. That's like two plays, you know what I'm saying, from a timing standpoint.
That's a lot of coverage time.
That's a lot of coverage. That's a lot of wear and tear in the back. So I'm trying to keep it as simple as I can without getting too deep, so when people listen to this, they can understand it. For the people who don't really understand coverages, it's just numbers. We got to get the quarterback in a certain amount of time, no matter if you run with three, four, or five, whatever it is. And if you don't, he's going to pick us apart in the secondary because those guys are moving really fast, and they're going to find the holes, okay? Or they're just going to beat us deep. So that's the answer. And one of the two things got to happen, better scheming, better players, if we're going to stick with him and that defense, or he just needs to change the whole doggone thing up and run a different defensive scheme anyway.
And if Gillespie does stay, we've got a bigger problem. That's not just what Shannon's talking about on the field. You got a, you got a PR issue that you're going to have to sell to all of your fans and your donors and everybody else that wants to believe that they want to come back to see this team next year. There's, and you got a big issue that Donati's going to have to deal with if Dykes can't handle the problem.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, Shannon, you know, let me end the discussion on the defense with possibly, and I don't know your answer to this, but I'm hoping, I know, I have a feeling I know. How did you feel about Banks in the second half of the season as a linebacker?
I love his play. I love his play, man. You talk about a hustler from sideline to sideline, and that's my point. That's my problem. I'd rather have him going after the quarterback than chasing running backs or chasing receivers, guys. Come on, that guy. I mean, you come and you scheme him to come through the line scot-free because everybody's there requiring double teams. He's going to get to him. Just like he got – I saw this guy running back down and beat him to the sideline. I mean, he caught him at the – I mean, before he's trying to get out, and Banks caught him. The guy can move. He's a man.
That's how D tore up Michigan.
Yeah, I mean, that's just – I love that guy. And the two guys that I really fell in love with is Hoover on the offensive side and Banks. Those are my guys. You know, I'm right.
Do you see Banks kind of emerging as that leader that we were hoping the defense would have?
100%. He's the only one I see. Just from his play. I don't know how vocal he is, but from a body language, from a leader, because that's kind of how I was. I wasn't a screamer and all that. It takes too much energy. I was a lead by example kind of leader. You know, that was my role. You know, I was captain in a leadership council, but I didn't – we had other guys do that. That was their thing. That's what hyped them up. That ain't me. I'm going to lead by my play, give you a pump fist, give you a headbutt, go on to the next play. But that guy, he's doing it all. I see his body language. I see his enthusiasm. I see his want to get to the ball. And that stuff is contagious. And I would build my defense around that guy. Because we have always been a linebacker-led defense, always. And so for me, I would build everything around that dude.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think if Gillespie does end up staying and he comes out, you know, to Barry's point, it is going to be a PR issue. But if he were to come out and he were to say, look, I think we found our linebacker of the future, the core guy who's going to lead us in. And these are the young guys. Yes, they got burned, but they got a lot of good experience behind it. And, of course, to Nathan's point, we've had a lot of really good shutdown corners who have come through TCU that if you were to go back to their first year playing – every single fan wanted them benched.
Yeah.
Every single one. We've had one in the past who nearly quit the team because of a bad game that he had his first year. And so I'm hesitant to say, oh, if Gillespie comes back, we can make, you know, lemonade out of these lemons, because I kind of feel like you, Shannon. I think there's got to be a whole lot more than just simply, you know, getting a couple different players and scheming slightly differently. I think there's a lot more going on here, and it starts at the top at the DC position. But if Gillespie does come back, I'm just curious, though, what you guys think. Do you think there's a chance with the players that we got and the experience that they got that this defense could possibly work next season? Or are we all just at this point saying we got to do something different?
Based off,
and I know Shannon, I know your answer.
I'm telling you, man. Again, the proof is in the pudding, guys. Go back and look at the scores. Go back and just look at the stats. They'll tell you the truth. That's we live by numbers. It's like the Bible when it comes to sports. It is what it is. And look at the points we gave up. Then you tell me, is that? It's defense, but is that coaching? Is that players? Is that both? And how do you make up – how do you cut 69 points down to 30? That's talent and that's schemes. That's talent and that's scheme. That's running a better scheme to put the talent you have in better situations. That's having depth. Go look at those games where we just got outscored when the offense put up points. If you can cut theirs down by at least one or two touchdowns, we win the game, besides the ones that are just obviously we blew them out. Because we probably struggled a little bit on offense, and we, again, like Coach said, we started slow, ended up pretty good. Again, the numbers don't lie. So for me, it's a little of both. And my thing is, you still have guys who got a year of experience of getting torched, and they will learn from it. How much better, and I don't know right now, don't have the stats in front of me versus, like, you know, we're a junior team of those guys, sophomores, juniors versus junior seniors. Like, I don't have that because that matters. And then you bring in new guys that are going to be fresh, got to be new. Unless they're transfer guys, two different things. Unless they're transfer portal guys, that's a whole other thing because they can pick up the scheme and go for it because they've been playing somewhere else. Okay, so I think that's the portal is going to be important to us when it comes to defense because you can't afford to get young guys. I'm sorry, you got to have some bodies who can come in and step up, get the scheme and play right now in that 3-3-5 in anything, but really the 3-3-5 for sure, right? Because we need more depth there. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, Nathan, I mean,
I hope that answered it.
I know you're not happy with the 3-3-5. I mean, that's it's just and to some degree, I do 100% agree with you. I'd love to see the 4-2-5 come back. But Nathan, if Gillespie stays, do you think that there's a possibility he can turn this around, or should we just go ahead and just hit the reset button now?
You better bring in some good people from the transfer portal. Like ASAP, because I think I was looking at something where they were saying people were like interested in, and I think there's a D lineman and a couple of D linemen there. You better bring in some dogs that can come in, produce right away. Because you can't, like, 1 year to the next year is really just a guessing game of how much that kid's actually going to learn from last year. And so you hope that they make progress. They learn from what they've done. Bad exposure is still exposure. So you better hope that it sunk in a little bit, but you don't know that. So you want to go out and get a guy that has that you've seen play well, know can play well, and now you just got to teach him something. Because if you could teach him, you got the rest of the spring, summer to teach him stuff. You got a lot of practices left in between that time. So you got to go get some big dogs, you know. And he better be at every bowl game watching some new defensive schemes.
And I'll say this. I will say this from a
– carefully without my tickets.
From a player
or wanting signals.
From a player standpoint, guy, and this is what we don't know, so this is pure speculation. Let me throw that out there. But if I'm not a fan of a 3-3-5 and as a team, as a defense, and trust me, guys, these guys know whether they like it or not. They got to roll with the punches because that's their coordinator. And I put in my work, but in my heart, I know this. I would say to myself, this shit don't work as a player. That's me saying, no matter how hard I work, if I don't believe in that defense, no matter how hard I work, telling you guys, that makes a difference. And we don't know that. I would love to sit up there on that stage and ask Barry and ask if some, well, they didn't get any defensive players, but hey, how do you guys feel about the 3-3-5 defense as a whole? Not how you play it, but the scheme of the 3-3-5. I would love to know those answers. I would, for anybody on defense that starts. Because I'm telling you, from what I've seen, I'll guarantee you, if they can speak truthfully, a lot of them don't like it. I can tell you that right now, just by watching the play.
Well, Barry, let me pose the same question to you. If Gillespie comes back, does he need to go, help me transfer portal, you're my only hope?
Probably. And that opens on Monday. So what's he doing? If he hadn't lost his job yet, I hope he spent the week figuring that out.
Well, I hope he does. And not just obviously on the defensive side. There's some other areas, especially special teams, we didn't really get into tonight. We can go ahead and see what happens there in the transfer portal. When we come back on our next podcast, we can kind of dissect that a little bit and see what moves actually did happen and see if TCU is in front of some of these people. Because like Nathan said, and Shannon, we were talking about some things that were happening before the podcast start. There are some moves already on the way. TCU coaches that we know, at least on the offensive side, are certainly looking at a bunch of people. We know a couple of people on defense that have been contacted. But again, how much of that is actually going through? And, you know, to one other point, Barry, you're right. Transfer portal opens up next week. If TCU is making a change at defensive coordinator, who's handling that process at this point? So, you know, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You get rid of your defensive coordinator right before the transfer portal opens. You don't have a new guy coming in. Are you missing out on an opportunity? And are you taking another step back when you hit that reset button starting next season? So something a lot of Frog fans have to think about. And even though I'm on that train where I think, again, there needs to be something done drastically to get this team back where it needs to be. And it doesn't have to be a lot. I think the offensive side of the ball is doing well. I think there's some tweaks here and there that need to be done. Obviously, special teams has to be addressed. It wasn't nearly as dire, I think. I think it was just exposed in certain areas where it was, you know, you needed to make a 54-yard field goal and you couldn't make a 54-yard field goal. But if you're putting your special teams in that kind of situation week in, week out, you know, I don't know how successful you're going to be as a team anyway. So, overall, I think this season had a lot of question marks going into it. Certainly not on the side of the ball that we thought. And I think we got a lot of answers, unfortunately, some of which were not exactly the type of answers that we were hoping for. But overall, TCU ends the season at 5-7, misses out on a bowl game. And we are heading into the offseason again with more questions. So hopefully the next time we talk to you all, we have a few more answers to give you. And hopefully there are good ones, because some of the rumors we're hearing about the transfer portal that we can't discuss, I think will be very good. So we'll see how that goes. And of course, you know, TC fans, one of the things that you can do nowadays in the wonderful world of modern college football is the NIL, right? And I'm not going to tell you what to do with your money. I'm not going to tell you who to donate it to. But if you're the type of person who's sitting on the fence thinking, boy, TC really needs to do something. TC really needs to get some of these players in. Well, nowadays, guess what? That's done through the NIL. And if you're the type of Frog fan who has the wherewithal and the means to be able to help out in that particular case, you may want to think about doing that. And again, I'm not going to tell you who to go to or who to talk to when it comes to that kind of stuff, but that's something to be thinking about as well. It's unfortunate that college football has become a business like that, but it is what it is. Well, with that, gentlemen, we've kind of run a little long in this particular podcast, but I want to thank each and every one of you for joining us this season. It's been great. I want to thank all of our sponsors over the season, especially the fine folks over at Raw Brewing who hosted us over the last second half of the season. It was really good to have time over there, and I think they still have the frog water on tap. So if you want to go by Raw and get that horn seltzer, go ahead and do that. That thing is fantastic.
And go get that, your frog water.
Yeah, absolutely.
Go get your frog water, people.
And with that, I see Shannon's about to light up another cigar and the Cowboys are about to play. So we're going to get going. Thank you all very much for joining us this season. I want to thank everybody out there for listening to the Killer Frogs. Of course, you can find the Killer Frogs on all the major podcasting platforms, Apple, Google Play, Stitcher, Amazon Podcast, as well as Spotify. And of course, you can go to killerfrogs.com. You can check out the Fan Nation and all those wonderful articles that Barry was talking about earlier and the amazing work that our writers are actually doing. Again, not just covering TCU football, but every single TCU sport. And, you know, nowadays, basketball season has gotten off to a big start. We're expecting really big things out of baseball. Rifle is still going strong. You've got all these other sports that are happening between, you know, golf and tennis and volleyball and beach volleyball, right? So, I mean, you got all these great sports that are happening. So go out and check out the Fan Nation in this offseason and just go see the quality coverage that Killer Frogs and Fan Nation is bringing to you. And, of course, if you want to just discuss TCU athletics, you can go to Killer Frogs and check out the forum. Sign up. It's free. Let us know what you think. Do you think Gillespie can stay and right the ship, or do you think he's got to go and we got to hit a reset? And do you want to see the 425 back at TCU? Let us know what your opinion. And Shannon is shaking his head. Yes, of course. So with that, we have come to the end of the podcast. And it's the time where we all get our frogs up and we get to say,
Go Frogs!